He's a highly trained broadcaster. Gary's right on the time. Our next speaker is William Barclay Allen, and the guy from Fernandino Beach, Florida. Of late from Michigan State.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Good morning to you all. I am very conscious at the moment of a wonderful challenge it is to rise to adversity, and therefore to adapt and to take advantage of the opportunity to display agility and adeptness, adroitness, all towards the end, of course, of making a community function as a whole, and to take its disparate components and bring them into some happy harmony that realizes the ultimate objective of the community organization in the first place. And that's what I have to talk about as well. So my circumstances are compatible with my duty on this important occasion. At the same time, there are collateral issues that crowd into my mind. I think I'm known in some circles as the dean of abandoned causes. And I think about the debate the other evening and how so many friends of the president have held their heads despondently. And I wonder if they watched the same debate that I watched. Now, I perhaps had a very special point of view because I was actually serving a purpose for a local newspaper back in East Lansing or Lansing. And therefore, I watched it to point the debate. And I found that the president scored outstandingly well on the points. Now, I wasn't watching smirks or smiles or any deferential bows to orthodox opinion, but simply responses to questions and the content and substance, the intellectual foundation. Well, in some ways, having to point out to friends of the president that they are unhappy for no sound intellectual reason doesn't seem to do them any good. And similarly, it is often the case that pointing out to people that they misunderstand Uncle Tom for sound intellectual reasons doesn't do them any good. Flannery O'Connor somewhere must have written that a great novel is a realistic presentation of fictional characters. And that goes a long way to convey what I have to say this morning on the title of this particular presentation, namely, Rethinking Uncle Tom, Wrong Turns in Black History. For it is almost incomprehensible that Uncle Tom has been treated in the manner that he has. We're talking about abandoned causes. It is even difficult for most people to contemplate reading the text any longer. It has been so much abused. Now, I will say instantly that in the last 20 to 30 years, there has been a substantial recovery for Harriet Stowe, one that's very well worthwhile. And yet, it hasn't really had a great deal of impact upon the stigma attached to Uncle Tom. For most of those who have participated in recovering Stowe to some degree of respectability have done so at the same time as apologizing for her racism. The literature is simply stunning in the pervasiveness of that particular conclusion. And that's the same conclusion, of course, that informs what I have called the wrong turn in Black history. It's a turn that transpired roughly starting in 1949 with James Baldwin, or the former James Baldwin, I should say, who wrote an essay rejecting Uncle Tom and set in train motions that produced a fairly uniform response to Uncle Tom as an unworthy expression, or shall I say, an unrealistic presentation of a fictional slave. Now, so the real question is that true? Was Uncle Tom an unrealistic presentation of a fictional slave? The remarks I aim to you this morning are to be drawn mainly from the concluding section of my discussion of Uncle Tom's Cabin, the section on Uncle Tom's Triumph. And that comes, of course, without preparation by way of advanced discussion of the drama of the novel, the story of the novel, and all the many intricacies that would help you to understand Stowe's purpose and writing. It also assumes people to have read the novel, well, there isn't time for me to supply that efficiency. And all I can say, I'm afraid, is if you haven't, then shame on you. You'll have to put up with a little eggheadedness in the process this morning. But we can certainly short-circuit some of this by letting me present to you a characterization rather than a reading, which will go quickly to the point that is at issue. And that has to do with how the novel comes to be in the first place. One needs to understand what Stowe's project was. And indeed, she had two projects, which is the first point of complication. Early, much earlier than 1850, when the novel was written, Harriet Stowe exchanged notes with her husband, in which notes she expressed an intention, and he had urged her to do this, to write a few sketches of ex-slaves demonstrating their capacities for useful and productive lives as freemen. Yes. She intended to write a few sketches of ex-slaves demonstrating their capacities for useful and productive lives as freemen. Now, that original project had taken form under the title, which became Uncle Tom's Cabin, or A Man Treated as a Thing. That was not, of course, the published title of the novel. The published title became Uncle Tom's Cabin, or Life Among the Lowly. Between the initial project and the published work, an amazing transition took place, one that completely altered the purpose of the novel and the results that it could reasonably accomplish. The best way to understand the transition is this. If you go to the end of the novel, you will see there presented in a short concluding summary chapter a discussion of ex-slaves living as freemen, demonstrating their capacities on the authority of Professor C.E. Stowe, her husband, having nothing to do with the novel itself. That was all that survived of the original purpose. The original purpose was to regard and the slave and the slave's experience from the point of view of understanding the slave as a victim and showing the slave as overcoming the status of a victim. That is not the novel that was written, as we know. The novel that was written presented instead what Nietzsche, more than anyone else, frankly, captured quite successfully in his criticism of Mrs. Stowe. In a long passage, he says, then the slaves and Mrs. Beecher Stowe, even to develop sympathy for the genius one no longer knows any other way for the past 500 years than to represent him as the great bearer of suffering. Now, that's a long passage in which he says this, but that goes to the heart of the matter. What Nietzsche did was to accuse Harriet Beecher Stowe of somehow treating human excellence, human genius, human greatness as revealed in a Christian manner, in the context of suffering, in the context, as it appeared to Nietzsche, not of the high, but the low. Life among the lowly. Now, he surmised correctly, did Nietzsche, that the genesis or significance of the novel lay in the creation of the human model of surpassing excellence as a democratic standard. But we don't have a lot of difficulty in imagining that that's a very hard sell. That's a very hard sell indeed. And it was so hard a sell that even in Stowe's own time, some people wondered about the accuracy of the portrait. A relation of my own, Martin Delaney, in the 1850s, attacked it rather severely. However, Delaney's attack was certainly one of the minority. Frederick Douglass did not do so. Most people did not do so at that point in time, and indeed, we can say that up until Baldwin in 1949, generally speaking, Stowe's work was regarded as a work that presented a worthy presentation of the image of Uncle Tom, the human model of moral excellence, and also even famous black poets such as Francis Ellen Watkins Harper or Langston Hughes or Paul Laurence Dunbar, up until 1950 practically, still celebrated Stowe and still celebrated Tom. But of course, we also know that that change, that Tom became, in fact, an epithet, that only hatred could be expressed for this particular portrait as it was presented, and the question of Tom's triumph no longer seems significant. One of the things that I would bring before you is the whole idea of whether it is possible. Francis Lieber expressed this difficulty. Many people did. They suppressed a book about slavery in 1856, expressed concern with this. The whole idea of presenting Uncle Tom, the slave, who does not rebel in appearance against slavery, as if somehow in that condition of what seemed utter domination, there could still emerge human excellence, indeed human, not merely human self-command, but human command over others. That entire idea was so unrealistic in the minds of some, and certainly in the minds of the contemporary critics, that we came ultimately to reject the possible discovery of moral excellence in the realistic portrait of the slave. So, what is the wrong turn? We turned away from, Harriet Stowe turned away from victimology, if I may call it, to the study and celebration of moral excellence. In the contemporary era, we turned away from a focus upon moral excellence, the contemplation of moral excellence, to victimology. And the question, of course, is, what did we lose in the process of making that turn? So the discussion of Uncle Tom's triumph, then, the concluding section of my discussion, is primarily a demonstration of why Stowe went to the trouble of creating a novel with two heroes, the conventional hero George Harris, the Patrick Henry of the novel, the give me liberty or give me death, and unfortunately also the hero of modern materialist constitution. And Uncle Tom, the suffering hero to be sure, but the individual whose own purpose, whose own talents, whose own example serve to provide every salvation that occurs in the novel. Uncle Tom is the thread that weaves the entire story in the novel. Now, Stowe makes this clear, and I cannot give you, unfortunately, an adequate understanding of it in this limited space. But she makes this clear with rich allusion to the work of Hegel, to the work of Baudelaire, to the work of Lord Byron, to the work of La Rochefoucauld. It goes on and on. In other words, she is working through the inherited traditions of the Western philosophical and moral conversation. And she is saying the only way to talk about the slave in a way that brings us to the sure conviction that slavery is wrong and there's need to abolish it is to establish the slave at the heart of that tradition and to prove on the basis of that tradition the argument she sets out to prove. Uncle Tom's triumph in the end, then, when he resists Simon Legree, when he drives Legree to insanity, when he saves Cassie, when he converts Quimbo and Sambo, when he brings order out of all the order, brings sanity out of the insanity, which is the world that Nietzsche had described as now necessary for the modern world, proves Harriet Beecher Stowe's point that it is only in the focus upon moral excellence, not on the focus on what we might now consider modern insanity a la Nietzsche, that we have any hope of establishing a principled rejection of slavery and any hope of opening the conversation about humanity on grounds that are not dehumanizing. Thus, Uncle Tom's Cabin and Uncle Tom himself require to be rethought. They require to be reestablished in our affection, and more importantly, reestablished in our understanding as a condition of our own moral and intellectual accomplishment.